Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
Pass up on the left wing side. Sabres gain the line. To the middle of the ice. Helenius holds it. Turns. Fires. Scores! Oh. It's raining goals in Buffalo. And the Sabres take a 3-2 lead with 9:45 still to go here in the opening period.
One of your first moments of the game. The moments in your life go forth to Firth Jewelers. Sabres lose. They had a 3-2 lead, and they had a 1-0 lead, a 2-1 lead, and a 3-2 lead, and lost it all. Although none of those leads really felt all that safe. I shouldn't say that. At 3-2 and starting the second period when Tage goes in on the breakaway, that felt like the culmination of, like, all right, here's where they put this team away. They didn't, and Montreal gets a couple of cheap ones and wins. And the Sabres have another home loss and head to Montreal for tomorrow night's game 6. 8 p.m. to try and advance the series. Fun question in the chat on our YouTube channel. You can join us on YouTube. You can watch every morning. Hey, hi. Here's the question brought up by one of the a listener, viewer in the chat. Which would you take as more likely right now? The Sabres to win in 7 or the Bills to make the AFC Championship game?
Whoa.
I think that's almost a perfect question.
It is.
Which is more likely? The Sabres just have to win two games, and the Bills, who are a favorite to make the AFC Championship game.
Mm.
Maybe the question that was intended was, will they win go to the Super Bowl? I think make the game is about the right way.
The
Bills are 10-1 to win the Super Bowl. Okay, so I mean, like, if you just gonna split that, is that 5-1 to make it, and 2.5-1, 3-1 to make the AFC Championship game, maybe?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The Sabres right now are +300 to win the series. So, which is more likely?
I would probably lean Sabres in 7.
It's just two wins.
Yeah.
And the Bills, a lot of things can go right, a lot of things can go wrong.
You never know in a
football
season.
I just kind of think it was a fun question, as we've got the schedule here, you're looking at the schedule.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
New coaching staff.
I think there's just too much... Almost more than the amount of games it is, the time. Like, there's just too much that could go wrong
Tons of time.
Right. Injuries, anything like that can derail it.
A million things.
Uh-huh. Right. Whereas this is right in front of the Sabres.
Yeah, win two
just
games.
Just go win two games over 4 days.
Win two games against a team you have already beaten twice.
Right.
Once here, once there.
Four times. You beat them twice in the regular season, right?
803-0550. And Montreal has, remember that record? They're like 1-1 in their last two.
Yeah, they
7-7. Now they're 8-8 in their last 14 or whatever it is. Last 16. We got to hope that holds up. That's that we had the other day. Kevin in Plattsburgh. Kevin, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love your show. Thanks. I listen every day.
Thank you.
I love the playoffs. It's such a hard road, and I'm not one to criticize. Because I see these guys are out there. They work so hard to get there. Love this team, and I know these guys are busting their butt. But last night's game was just different for me for some reason. I was mad. I was angry by the end of that. And, you know, I'll tell you one reason. Leave Tucky alone, okay? Tucky is a wily veteran. He's a smart. He's doing all the little things. He's hustling. He's blocking shots. He's playing the PK. Tage Thompson, my goodness. You got these young kids. You got Helly out there, Benner. These guys are busting their butt. They're making crafty plays. They're working the boards. They're working so hard. And you see this guy coasting. And when he took that dumb penalty that may have cost us the game, again, how many dumb penalties, every time this guy touches the puck, he is a liability. It's embarrassing to see these young kids, Donner, everybody is working so hard. Power had another great game. I hope he's okay. Dolls, I didn't like his penalty, but at least he's defending the net and he's being tough. But this Tage Thompson, what a liability. And, you know, I'll tell you, too, I didn't.
I guess I just don't know how you would separate Tuck from Thompson in terms of which one deserves a pass and which one deserves to be called out? How would you decide which is which?
Yeah, well, I think Tuck, first of all, I got a lot of respect for Tuck. He's done it a long time, and you look
okay,
at
but, like little... that kind of doesn't matter. Like, we're in this series, okay. What you did 6 years ago, wherever you were, like, it's, you know, we're in the moment.
Yeah, that's fair. Look, I mean, Lindy said it himself. Tuck doesn't have the confidence right now, but I feel like, you know, one nice play and he's back in the saddle. But, you know, Tage, he's got a couple of total flukes,
it
right?
It might just be, I'll answer for you, Kevin, here. I'm going to get some other calls. The penalties. I mean, Tuck's not taking penalties and Tage is taking stupid penalties. Mm-hmm. Like, so Tuck is hurting his team when he's on the ice, and Tage is hurting his team when he's on the ice, and he's also hurting his team by going off the ice and into the box.
Right.
Is he a net minus four on penalties, Tage? He has taken six and drawn two.
Yeah, that, so and the one last night is
right,
as bad as you can.
So I,
have.
So I, what I have from Tage is not only getting dominated when he's on the ice, but a net minus 8 minutes of power play time for Montreal. Which, I mean, Montreal 5-on-5 has not been demonstrably better than the Sabres in the series, but the power play is definitely lethal.
Yeah,
and like they draw. Whether they draw momentum from that or they just draw actual goals from that.
Yeah, almost doesn't matter if they draw momentum because they score all the time.
Right, but I mean, I think it's real tough to defend Tuck as like, it's okay, he's been there before. When he's on the ice, it's 8-0 at even strength for Montreal. So, you know, he does all the little things and Tage is the problem. I think the only thing I'd really notice as a difference is the penalties.
Yeah.
Tage takes the penalty, and then Tuck has to go kill the penalty.
Right, and then you know sometimes gets scored on the kill. The penalties thing we haven't talked about those yet today. Those two penalties that Tage and Dahlin, like
again,
your two guys
again, that's the story in Game 4
exactly. And the Tage penalty is completely unacceptable. Like away from the play,
didn't Dahlin take a late penalty in Game 6 in Boston? What they had to kill a penalty late in? No, they didn't take it.
No. Benson took the only penalty.
Is that
penalty.
Game 3 in Boston?
It might have been. Because game 6, they got no penalties.
He takes a run at McAvoy late in game 3.
That might be right.
Anyway.
Whatever. He has taken his fair share, too. His penalty, I thought Demidov was already falling and it was a little soft, but he's been putting refs in a position to make calls on him. And the fact that those two penalties by those two players, Tage and Dahlin, are the two goals that end up getting by Luukkonen and changing the game. It's the two power plays that your two best players gift wrap and hand over is fitting for how this series has gone. Those guys have not been good enough, and they gift wrapped the game last night. That's what they did. That Tage penalty is a cross check away from the play. Like, nothing about it needed to happen. Nothing. At least Dahlin is coming back at the net trying to stop, you know, a grade A chance from Demidov. But you cannot be hurting your team that much as those two guys, your captain and your assistant captain, your best forward and your best D, and they are the guys that burned you.
John in Tennessee is up. Hey, John.
Good morning, boys.
Morning.
I heard you guys like a lot of chaos.
Sometimes. Sometimes chaos is good.
Yeah, I mean, the last time Chaos played, he had a long break, and he came in and shut somebody out.
Colton Chaos, 37 saves against Columbus, right?
Yes, sir.
Owen, is it Colton Chaos time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, why not?
I mean, it's not his time. I understand the fun that could be, and like maybe – you know, the same reason that you might think Luukkonen because of the high ceiling, you might think Ellis, but no, it's just too, it's the environment will be too crazy and it will be too, it's just not
everything. What they said about Hellenius, right?
I was just going to say, everything you heard about Hellenius, Hellenius, I'm saying it the old way now, Hellenius was like, it's going to be too big a spot. Like, I think if there's any position and anything you could, that could be a real, like, solid case for, it's that position in Montreal in an elimination game. Like, that place on Saturday night will be there aren't going to be the words to describe what that environment is going to be like for these
guys. It'll probably be like it was in Game 6 of the first round when they lost.
Right.
They lost.
But
at
it'll
home.
Be even crazier because maybe, it's the maybe, second. It will be.
Maybe.
The second round.
You're in the. They missed the playoffs last year. Or sorry, they make the playoffs last year. They lose in five games. Mm-hmm. They get in and they're at home to knock out Tampa at home in game six for their first playoff series win with this group. Like, I understand the stakes are higher.
Right.
I don't know. Does a person that's at the game yell? Do they save a level of volume in round two than game one? Maybe. I'm just saying they lost that game in the first round. So
they did. They did.
As crazy as that would be, you think game six of the first round was more crazy than game three of this round? They lost it. I'm leaving it open.
It's a good question.
They did lose.
Absolutely.
Is there too much pressure on them that they need to pretend they're on the road? Jim in Grand Island. Oh, go ahead, Jim.
Hey, guys. Yeah, it's a very disappointing morning. But, you know, and the thing, you guys are reading my notes, the stupid penalties – to me, were probably, like I say, the turning point. I mean, after Hellenius's head was almost cross-checked off in the last game, don't you think the refs were going to be looking out for cross-checking penalties, possibly, that would be addressing something like that? And then you have Thompson and Dahlin both do it. You know, it was like, you know, it's like, guys, what are you thinking, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, and like I say, it just got to the thing. Definitely, to me, that was the turning point of the game, just like you guys said, and just like my notes said. I was sitting here looking at, were you guys spying on my notes? no, but yeah, that was the big thing to me, is that the stupid penalties, and like I say, the Thompson and Tuck kind of being like ghosts out there. You know, they're not,
yeah. It's also,
not producing.
Thanks, Jim. It's also that Montreal, like, again, you say the game turned there. I kind of can't believe they let Dobich find his game. Like, you know, you had him. You really had him. He was.
Totally. He was swimming. He was swimming.
Yep.
2 5 hole goals. The one from Hellenius was
rough.
I mean, horrible. That goal is unacceptable to give up. And yet, they find a way.
He made that save on the breakaway.
He makes that save on the breakaway. Exactly. That is, you want to talk about, I said this last night, that's an example of when a goalie can make their presence felt. I talk about that all the time on this show, about there are moments within a game that a goaltender's play matters more, and that was his moment, and he made the save, and that was it. And when Luukkonen could have had his moment and stopped a real push from Montreal, he gave up two softies.
Tuck's quotes from last night, he said, among other things, I can't play the way I'm playing right now, just going to be will and determination, but I've got to move past it. I've got to move on to the next game. I've got to be better for the guys in this room. Decision-making's got to be cleaned up a little bit. I guess skate a little harder, a little faster, just need more of everything. That's Alex Tuck. Yeah. At 5-on-5 in this series, that Krebs-Thompson-Tuck line has been outscored. 5-0, outchance 31-17. And the Canadians have earned a 69% expected goal share against the Sabres' top line. 803-0550 to join us on the Sabres, on the Bills' schedule. Bills in the AFC Championship game or the Sabres to win this series? It's probably right around the same line, but it's got to be the Sabres more likely. It's just two games. Win two games, you know? Win two games. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's back on Monday here on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Guys, how are you?
He keeps the people coming back for more.
My Uber dropped me at the wrong terminal, so I had to wait for a bus.
On WGR.
All Paul's travels, always an experience for
him. Is that a new one or an old one there?
Middle of the pack. Happy Friday, everybody. Very tough loss for the Sabres. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And we're going to get this morning started off right away, as the Sabres will have a busy morning today as they'll now travel to Montreal for Game 6. So we welcome in Paul Hamilton here on the Western Hotline. Paul, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, could be better. Yesterday started amazing. The first period was a period of hockey, Paul, and then it really kind of got away from the Sabres in the second.
You know, it's rare to see a team come out like that at their best. Well, kind of their best, because they did allow Montreal to stay in the game, but some of that was just a little bit of luck, you know, pucks hitting skates and going into the net. But the Sabres were fast. They were going north to south. They were winning battles. They were going to the net. They were getting pucks and people to the net. You know, a lot of guys were looking good. And, you know, you could take a 3-2 lead and everything's going well. And then it's just a total collapse in the second period. It completely and utterly reverses. And I remember, I'll probably on every show, including with you guys, we would, in the regular season as it wound down, you were saying, well, is there a team you'd rather play or rather not play? And I said, really, the only team I would try to avoid is Montreal. I just don't think the Sabres match up well against them. I didn't think then when we were talking about it that they would. And Lindy Ruff hit the nail right on the head. He said, when the Sabres make a mistake, Montreal makes them pay. When Montreal makes a mistake, the Sabres do not make them pay because too many guys are not on top of their games right now. And really, I think the very obvious turning point, I think many people would agree and probably have said it, is, you know, when Tage Thompson has the breakaway and he goes in and he makes that play all the time, you know, where he, you know, goes to the far side and lifts the puck over the goaltender. Couldn't lift the puck. He also can't stick handle. You guys can take it from there. You know, that's been a huge problem. His stick handling and lack of it has cost them 3 goals directly in this series. And that play, he makes it all the time. And he didn't even come close to lifting the puck. You know, as I said, is there a problem? Again, I'll let the fans and you and other people that may have their, you know, have your opinions on it, because that is the play of the game right there. Where he scores that, makes it 4-2. The fans will continue to be blowing the roof off the place, and you know you got your 2-goal lead. And the bench was, it would be up and everything, and then after that. It's a thing. The Sabres can't defend Montreal either. They defend them very poorly, where Buffalo normally is a very good team defending. But against Montreal, they're not. I mean, Timmins wound up on the bench for most of the game after he gives the puck away for 1 goal and then doesn't get to Anderson on the other one. And Anderson's there for a tap-in. You know, very poor coverage there. So, you know, but he's not the only one. I mean, the Sabres' best players are not their best players. They're not even close, where Montreal's best players have joined the fray and have, you know, helped to take over the series. And, you know, you can just take it one-on-one, go with the goal scorers. Caulfield is outdoing Thompson. Suzuki is outdoing Tuck. Hudson is outdoing Dahlin. And it's by a lot. It's not by a little. And when that's happening, I would almost say you're almost lucky you're at 3-2 with a chance to tie the series in Montreal, where on the, you've been 4-1 on the road this year in the playoffs. You've been a good road team all year in the regular season. So, you know, you have the opportunity, just like I said before Game 4, you can erase all this. Go in, you play, go find your game, go play, defend better. They did stay out of the penalty box, but still, their two leaders, Thompson and Dahlin, take silly penalties, and now Montreal's 2-for-2 on the power play. And sometimes the Sabres have done very well on their penalty kill in this series, and sometimes they've been horrendous. Their penalty kill has been very up and down in this series, where it hadn't been up and down, well, a little bit during the season, but for the most part, it had done very well. The penalty kill won them the game in Montreal. Certainly you give them 2 power play goals and a 3-2 lead turns into a 6-3 deficit, and giving up 4 unanswered goals, two of them on power plays.
Yeah. The penalty kill, I think especially, Paul, has been a big issue for them. Montreal, I mean, that's one of their superpowers, is that power play. Even when their top guys weren't getting going on 5-on-5 throughout even the Tampa series, they were able to get going on the power play.
I think at times it's been an issue. The power play won them the game in Montreal.
Yeah.
Or the penalty kill. The penalty kill won them the game in Montreal. I mean, they did a phenomenal job. But at times, yes. But I wouldn't say all the time. It's been very, very inconsistent, I think, is the right way to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get to the guys that have not been performing. We didn't even mention Alex Tuch there either. I think that has to be a real question going forward for the Sabres. But, Paul, it was almost stunning for me in that game. We talked about how fast they started in the first period, how fast they start in the second period. It felt like a goal was inevitable for the Sabres. You mentioned the Thompson play, the breakaway. If he scores there, it's 4-2. But for me, it was also just how quickly it completely unraveled for them. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen does not finish the game. He doesn't even play in the third period. Alex Lyon goes in. It was just, you're right to point out, like, where Buffalo almost can't punish Montreal for their mistakes, whether that is Jakub Dobish or their team as a whole. Montreal just felt like the moment the Sabres took the pedal off the gas, I think this is fair for three of the last four games, all of a sudden everything goes Montreal's way. They can load up on the scoreboard and really just take control of the game, kind of in the blink of an eye, really.
What's the head scratcher is you had Dobish on the ropes.
You did.
He
absolutely
almost was pulled.
Three goals and four shots.
Another goal. He's out. He's done. And they stopped shooting. They stopped. Then they decided they're going to try to pass the puck into the net. It's like, wait a minute here. What did you miss here? You just scored three goals on this guy. You got him on the ropes. He doesn't look good. Why are you not shooting on him anymore? Why are you trying to pass the puck all over the place and overpassing and wind up losing it before you ever get an opportunity on net? I don't get it.
Then you kind of
let him just sit back there and get his confidence back, and then he's ready to finish the game and do well for the rest of the game.
The Hellenius goal is the one I think of where he just turns around, fires it, and because that's when Dobish is having a poor run, it's a terrible goal for him to give up. But for a lot of that period, Montreal's out shooting Buffalo for a lot of that period. It was really something. I guess where I sit here now, Paul, and you mentioned it already, I mean, a lot of the high-end players for Montreal, their counterparts on Buffalo, they're outplaying them. I mentioned there, too, I mean, we've talked Thompson and whatever's going on with him. Is he hurt? Is he just not playing well? Darlene, what's going on there? I know the underlying numbers are much better for Darlene. The guy I look to, though, is Alex Tuch. I think for as good as he was in the Boston series, he has been a complete ghost throughout the series against Montreal.
Yeah, he has. I mean, as Lindy Ruff talked about, he's not moving his feet. He's not even getting to battles. I mean, there's very few battles in the offensive zone. The chances are way in favor of Montreal when he and that line are on the ice. Now, I mean, Thompson has kind of at least come through a little bit. He has 4 points in five games, but he's also minus whatever it is, 7, 8, 9, I'd have to look it up. It's somewhere in there. And, it's just mind-boggling how he goes from playing extremely well in the Boston series to just a ghost of himself here in this series. And I don't even think he knows what to say or do anymore. You know, it's like it's not going well for him, and he keeps saying he's got to be better. And, of course, he's not wrong, but I think the wheels are just spinning. Is it the matchup with Montreal? Are they just too fast for what the Sabres like to do? And the Sabres are a fast team, too. I mean, Lindy Ruff was talking the other day, well, if you go to the analytics, we're actually the faster team in these games. But it doesn't look like it when you're watching it. And it's just like when the Sabres turn the puck over, Montreal's gone. And then the puck's in the net. When the Canadiens turn the puck over, Buffalo might be gone. They might not be gone. They usually don't put the puck in the net. And, it's been a huge difference in this series. And, Tuch has been a part of that.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Paul, I don't want to do all the doom and gloom. I mean, yes, they're going to be now facing elimination going for the rest of this series. But yesterday there were some pretty encouraging things, though, as well, including the wake-up of the third line, so to say, quote-unquote. I mean, Hellenius between Zucker and Quinn. Zucker gets a goal. Hellenius puts one in the net. Quinn continues to be snake-bitten, but it looks like, at the very least, they woke up that line last night.
Can I be a jerk for a minute?
Do it.
Why is that the third line? Why isn't Norris the third line? Or why is Norris the second line? Or why isn't that line the second line?
I tried to correct myself there, Paul.
They have a top line. They have a bottom line. They don't have a second and third line because, depending on the game, one of those lines acts like the second line, and then might the next game the other line might act like the second line.
All right, my turn.
Maybe we could say they have 2 second lines or 2 third lines.
You know what? Permission to be a jerk?
Yeah.
The middle six, Paul. but seriously, the middle six has been trying to carry them, but the other part of that middle six wakes up last night.
Yeah, no, they did at least for a part of the game, you know, and look really good. And those are the guys that are coming through. Doan, Benson, Helenius, recently. Those are the guys that are coming through for them, not the guys you would expect to come through for them, that need to come through for them. And you can imagine where the Sabres would be in this series if the top line was playing at a high level, in addition to what you're getting out of those guys. And Lindy Ruff didn't like the way McLeod was defending, so he took him off that group. And that's when Helenius got his chance, and now he's with Malenstein and Greenway, trying to, and that started in the regular season where his defending isn't even close to what it was last year, unless we're talking about the penalty kill. He and Tuck in the regular season were a good pair together, so that makes, with those guys producing the way they are, it makes what's happening to Thompson and Tuck and Krebs even worse. Because Buffalo might have this series all done if those guys are playing the way they were played in the regular season or even in the Boston series.
Yeah, Paul, it's something I think is both like a huge positive for the Sabres going forward. Like, it's a good problem to have. But seemingly any time they've needed a jolt, it's been these young guys that are making playoff debuts, or they're under 23 years old, and they're coming in kind of with this almost ignorance is bliss sort of attitude, and it's the old guys. It not even necessarily older guys. Old guys, they're not, the Pittsburgh Penguins. But it's the leadership of this team that are not getting it done, and it has to be guys like Benson, who just turned 21, Helenius, who's 20, Oslin, when he came in the Boston series, they seem to give themselves the mm-hmm. jolt that they need. I think, again, it's a nice problem to have. It points to a very promising future going forward, but I think it also opens up, and again, the series is not over with. They play it again tomorrow, and if they win tomorrow, it'll open up a Game 7 at home on Monday. But it also opens up a lot of questions about the veteran group on this team.
And the thing is, we're talking about Tuck in this series, but when Kekalainen looks at Tuck, he can look at his overall playoff play, including 4 years in Vegas.
Right.
How did he play in the playoffs in Vegas? What kind of player was he there? Was he somebody you could count on? How did he play against Boston? I think he would take the whole thing into account along with the age. And I don't think you would just take this series and say, well, we're not going to pay Alex Tuck, forget it. I think you still have to take everything and look at it, including age, and how long of a contract you would want to put on it, and look at it that way. The name we have omitted here is Norris. He's not producing either. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be producing offense too, so there's a fourth guy. You've got Krebs, you got Thompson, you've got Tuck, and you've got Norris. Now, Norris, defensively, I haven't had a problem with. And he seems to be skating a little bit better, but the results aren't there. Finally, Zucker got a goal. Will that help get some results out of him now as far as, getting actual goals? I mean, Quinn, he's the one that reeled around and took the shot that was tipped in by Zucker. But it was a good play by Quinn all the way around. So, how does this take them moving forward as we go into Game 6 in Montreal? Can they build on it? And can all of a sudden your top line act like the top line? And you got to win 2 games here. You don't got to win 8 games. You don't got to win 4 in a row. You got to win 2, which they've done many times before this year. So if the top line kicks in and does what it's very capable of doing in the last 2 games, you've got an opportunity to win 2 games.
Paul, we can move ahead a little bit here to the questions about potential lineup changes for Game 6. I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen does not see the third period of this game. I would imagine that means that Alex Lyon starts game six. Owen Power, we're going to find out the latest on him as well after that ugly spill into the boards. I think he played all of, like, I think I saw one shift after that, unfortunately. And it looked more like a tested out kind of thing.
Well, you know, Lindy, we'll find out when we see warm-ups tomorrow. Yeah. We're not going to find out anything today other than, well, he's this, that. He's, unless he, like, he broke something and is done for the season or something like that. But
that is finding something out.
Yeah, that would be finding something out. But I don't think we're going to get any thing that will, you know, we all know how it is. And I think, you know, we'll see the morning skate tomorrow. It's not like we're going to get to see a practice today to see anything. That would at least help us with the goaltender. But we'll get a morning skate tomorrow. But even that doesn't necessarily mean anything because Timmins was a maintenance at the morning skate yesterday, and he did play. And how much did injury hinder him, if at all?
Right.
We don't know. Those are the things that maybe you find out after the playoffs. How much is injury hindering any of these guys we're talking about? Is it hindering any of the guys we're talking about? We don't know. And again, we may or may not find out after the series. I mean, there's one team that listed like a whole laundry list as the Flyers.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
of guys, you know, that was, you know, after the series. Nobody knew what they were playing with. So, yeah, unfortunately, I wish we would get a clearer picture today, but without a practice, I would be very surprised if we did get a clearer picture until at least we can see a morning skate.
Where do the Sabres go here with Luukkonen and Paul? I mean, I imagine tomorrow it's going to be Lyon and maybe him again in Game 7. It depends, I guess, on his performance. But for Luukkonen, I would say this has been, to put it kindly, a mixed bag playoffs for him. He's solid in game one against Boston, disastrous in game two, and then he gets into the series. Very good first start, 28 saves, and then last night you could argue it kind of took them out of the game with some of the goals he gave up in the second period. It's just, for as strong as he was to end the year, Paul, I think he's been equally as frustrating here in the postseason.
And what does Lindy Ruff do here? Does he go back to rotating? Does he play Lyon in game six? And if there's a game seven, does he play Luukkonen?
Oh, I'm sure that would get a calm, rational reaction.
Because that's, he really liked that alternating. And, you know, when they did alternate, they were getting wins. Here in the playoffs, when they don't alternate, they're not getting the wins that you know, when the goaltender comes in for the second game, it's not working out.
Right.
You know, after they win the first game.
Paul,
like it
Paul
did.
Need those 2 days of rest.
Yeah, like it did during the regular season. So, you know, does he go back to it? Who knows? I mean, who knows? I'm sure he's talking about everything in the coach's room. I'm sure everything is on the table and they're talking about everything. How do you handle it from here? But before you start talking about game seven and alternating goalies, right, you got to get through the game six, and then maybe this conversation that we're having, they would have after a game six. Right now, it's like, who gives us the best chance to win in game six? I agree with you guys. I would think it would be Alex Lyon.
I would assume. It's a conversation I think we're probably going to have more in the offseason. As strong as their goaltender play was, there is this negative, though, that they don't have that guy. I think maybe the biggest difference in this series has been Jakub Dobesh for Montreal. He took hold of that job late in the season for them. He's played every game for the Canadiens as well. And even last night, he starts off really poor, but he stabilizes. And even when the Sabres had runs in the second period and in the third period, he holds strong and makes sure it never really becomes a game again.
Yeah, no, that it's just, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, I don't think they're going to make any goaltending change. I think they like their goaltenders this year, and I would be very surprised if it's, because Lyon's under contract, if it's not those two again. What do they do with Ellis? I don't know. You know, I think the minute you put him on waivers, he goes back to St. Louis. I don't know how really they feel about him. You know, we knew how Adams felt about him. So, you know, how does that play into it? So I don't think you're going to go with three goaltenders again next year. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that, but they got to figure out this game six before we get into all that.
Yeah, 100%. Paul, last thing for me here, because I know you got a busy morning. I do want to end at least on a positive note. The postseason that Josh Stone has had, I mean, thank goodness they've already signed him to a contract extension. He's one of the younger players. Funny enough, he's on the older side of things. I have just loved his game really since probably game three, if I'm being not even generous, just if I'm trying to look back all the way to the Boston series, but game three on, I think Doan has been one of their best players. And I know why Zach Benson's getting a lot of the headlines. I do understand that. But Doan has been phenomenal for them.
Well, they're working hand in hand, you know, both on the power play and regular shifts. So I think they're a good pair, you know, to have on the ice together, you know, any way you do it, with the way they play, as they call each other dogs with the W.
Love them.
And, I agree 100%. I've loved his season. I think, you know, he's really come into his own, and it's something that we all know. It was confirmed by both GMs that Buffalo was not going to make the trade unless Doan was in it. They basically hung up on it. And then Utah decided, we want Paterka enough that we will put Doan into the trade. Huge mistake. Huge, huge mistake on their part. I would take Josh Doan any day of the week over J.J. Paterka, and I would have the day of the trade. I would have taken his potential, because he had scored close to 30 goals, and he didn't get there, but in the AHL. So, you know, Adams was absolutely right about there being a good upside potential for him. So, it's really was a good move for them. And I think almost a fireable offense in Utah, not only to pick up a guy like Paterka, but to give him $7.7 million. That's asinine.
Right.
And when you would have been a better team if you just would have kept what you had and not even made a trade. But they made the trade, and they're stuck with it.
That's the thing. I mean, Vegas is on to the Western Conference Final after last night, but you wonder where Utah is if they just kept Doan and ultimately Kesselring and just rode that team
forward. Because Utah has other really good players.
Exactly.
But they got a player that I don't care if he scores 30. He kills them, just like he killed the Sabres. And, you know, Doan does – you outlined it very well, the things that he does. And not the things J.J. Paterka does, that's for sure. You don't see Doan giving up on plays. You don't see Doan loafing back. You don't see Doan, you have to basically put dynamite up him to get him to back check. I mean, J.J. Paterka can score goals. There's no question about it. If that's all you want and you don't care about the rest of the game. That was a disastrous trade, in my opinion, for Utah.
Yeah. All right, Paul, we know you got a busy morning, so we'll let you get to it. You also got some travel as well.
Yep.
Have fun in Game 6. We'll talk again soon.
Take care, guys.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the Wester Hotline, and his appearances are brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. And yes, as we laid it out there with Paul, Game 5 goes to Montreal, and while it started off incredible, and even I would say it was the Sabres game outside of a few bad bounces going Montreal's way, it quickly dissolved into all of a sudden Montreal having complete control of that game towards the end of the second period. Just an absolutely incredible turn of events. And now the Sabres do face elimination tomorrow night in Montreal. 803-0550. Phone lines open up the rest of the way. We'll get your thoughts and we'll give ours as well, as the Sabres do drop another game against Montreal. And ultimately, three of the last four have been very rough outings for the Sabres. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a Friday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
That's tapped away, back into the wall again. Kept in with Shannon tipping it around behind the goal. A dead end from the goal!
swing around in front, and the Buffalo Sabres on the goal from Holzinger have taken the lead early here in the first period. Groshek in over the line, looking for Barnaby. Groshek in and scored! Barnaby can't connect. The score! Following up on the play, Žitnik. Žitnik picks it up and blasts it home before Tugnut could get set. And the Buffalo Sabres increase the margin to 2-0. Get back in and take a hit from Pitlick. Get back in the corner. Pick and front goal! Sabres increase their margin to 3-0 with 4:16 remaining on the clock. That's knocked out, and the Sabres come up with the puck. Ronan. Turning at center ice, the buzzer goes, and the Buffalo Sabres have come up with a huge victory here in the Corral Center to send this series to a deciding game.
And Steve Shields with his first NHL shutout. And it was a dandy here tonight in Ottawa. A clutch performance by Shields and his teammates as the Sabres win it in style here against the Senators and force Game 7 Tuesday night at Marine Midland Arena.
One time in Sabres history, they have rallied from a 3-2 series deficit with Game 6 on the road to propel it to 7 and win it there. We all know that Derek Plant ultimately would be the hero in 1997, Buffalo's lone Game 7 win. But Marty Baron, as we venture into a Friday episode of Sabres Live here, it's all about Game 6 first because of what transpired last night in Game 5. Your sober second thought on what was the turning point last night that allowed Montreal to take the series lead?
My sober second morning quarterback, whatever thought is, we got to figure out the top line, right? Obviously, like Montreal's figured it out. Suzuki, Caulfield, they're going now, and it feels like, you know, Thompson has gotten his points. He's got 11 points in 11 playoff games. It's mm-hmm. point a game. But in moments where that line needs to get going, we haven't seen it. And now I know Lindy Ruff has been patient and has made a couple of tweaks with the forward lines, but nothing with the Thompson line. Today they're not practicing. Tomorrow they're going to have a morning skate, get ready for, you know, a game 6 Saturday night in Montreal. But I feel like you have to take apart the Thompson line and start anew. I know it's very risky. But what's the alternative? You've given it time and time again. You have to figure out the Thompson line and give Tage new life on that line.
They may not take the morning skate tomorrow. More from Lindy coming up as he addressed the media this morning before he and the team and you head to Montreal with Dan for Game 6 tomorrow. Obviously, we'll have the big watch party here at KeyBank Center. Can't wait for that. Yes. More on that coming up. Shayna Goldman. Her Friday slot is going to be filled later today as we look forward to hearing her evaluation of the series so far and also what has now been set in the West, and that is a Vegas-Colorado conference final. To the point of the line, Thompson, Tuck, Krebs, I think Tuck is probably garnering even more of the attention at this point in
time. Right now, yes.
For the drop-off in production from round one against Boston to round two. And I guess on the heels of a game 4 win, it's maybe a little surprising to me that we're now right back where we started the week. And that mm-hmm. was, how do you maximize the forward yep. contributions here? And as we discussed earlier in the week, my changing of the lines would have started with the deconstruction of the McLeod line. And
yes,
that did happen, obviously, as McLeod went down to a fourth line role in game 4 and was there last night.
And it worked.
The line had an awful lot, I thought. But now it does appear that there needs to be more in the way of a shakeup. Do you have, in your head, what you want for Thompson's wingers at this point in time? Because
yeah.
there's obviously, it's kind of strange. You're sitting here after a Game 5 loss thinking, well, Konstantelos's line was pretty good. And yep. even, you know, they were on for one against, I get it, but they still outscored their opponent 2-1. And the Norris line still is heavy, heavy, heavy ozone time with great work by Doan and Benson. So I feel like you already used this word a little risky at this point in time just to try to get Tage going or yeah. and or talk. What's the approach then?
Well, you know, it's funny because the deconstruction of the McLeod line has worked because Hellenius has come in and played really well. And now Zucker got his first of the playoffs. And maybe Quinn's still not producing, especially goals. But, I mean, I think that that line has had a better look, mm-hmm. a better energy. So that has worked. Now, for me, it's a very simple solution. And we've talked about it. And we've had, you know, these kind of lines that have been submitted on social media to us at Sabres Live on X. And like Norris had so many chances early in the second period. I can think of three chances. Yeah. One where Benson gave it to him in a low play, another in the slot. And Josh Norris has not scored and has not produced in that way. So I would say, okay, let's make the swap. Let's make the center swap. Let's go Norris. You're going to go with Tuck and Krebs, and let's see if that worked. But ultimately, let's put Benson and Doan with Thompson and continue the duo that Doan and Benson have been able to mm-hmm. to create with the energy. And let's have Tage in the middle there to hopefully get going. Look, I mean, the people are talking. They're like, is Tage injured? He was a little short answering that question, you know, last week. But at the end of the day, Tage played over 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, he's taking faceoffs. He's doing a lot of the things that you would think a healthy player is doing. So let's give him Benson and Doan, and let's give him all the chances to succeed and have an impact game in game six. Right now, it's still just rolling the dice for me with Krebs and Tux. And you know, it could be good if everybody plays their best, but it's, you're at the craps table, you're hoping for a specific number. And I think you would give yourself a lot more of a chance to get Tage going if you add him with Benson and Doan.
Are you surprised by the end result based on how the first period went last night and the two teams combining for five goals in a 10.5-minute stretch, and the Sabres holding a 3-2 lead through one and well into the second period?
I'm not surprised. I'm surprised because I thought, okay, it's 3-2. Now you lock it down. Now you got that first period where you're like, hey, you know what? Let's be careful here. We can't get into these track meets with the Montreal Canadiens. They're gonna be able to score goals. And I'm surprised that Dobesh was able to find his game the way that he did in the second period and on, especially mm-hmm. after a really bad first period. But I also put that on the Sabres. You push Dobesh back in his net. You look at all the goals the Sabres have scored in the first period. Dobesh is well inside the blue paint. And you have net front presence, and you have everybody right in front of him. Where was that net front presence? Where was the pushback on Dobesh? Dobesh was able to play his game and be aggressive again. So I'm surprised on a lot of fronts. The one thing I shouldn't be surprised is the Sabres did hang on. I'm not going to say hang on for dear life, but they did hang on with 27 block shots, and Montreal had all the push in game four, and Buffalo hung on. When you play that way, you're going to crack. You're going to open up the door. Look at what Colorado did to Minnesota the night before. They're down 3-0. They're down 3-1 with 4 minutes left. They were pushing. Minnesota did not have anything in, you know, the third period, but pretty much in the second half of the game. So comebacks happen. Teams score goals, and this league is a league of comebacks. Now, Montreal was pushing. They got their lead. And then Buffalo pushed in the third period, but I didn't feel like it was a a sustained push. I think there was more frustration, like a frustrated push by Buffalo. There was more frustrations to that.
Well, I mean, the first minute of the third period, though, could have written an entirely different script. Dahlin was denied. Benson just went wide on a chance. This is all in the first minute. And then, you know, again,
Slafkovský hit a post in the first minute, too.
Well, yeah,
so
that's
you're like,
the thing.
Oh, they got their look.
Right. He you know, it really could have deflated the Sabres after that opening minute had Slafkovský scored on that 2-on-1.
Yep.
At the end of the day, you have two penalties that that become lightning rods as well, based on, you know, what transpired in Game 4 and the penalties. Really, this series, it's been this way. You know, just the timing, the nature of some of the penalties, and unfortunately for Buffalo, it was Thompson and Dahlin that got called for them. Thompson's obviously was considered to be one that was really not related to a play. You know, Dahlin was in the process of defending when the stick got where it got in a cross-checking manner, and, you know, it is what it is. But Montreal's power play proved to be, you know, pretty awesome once again. I'm looking at this and wondering, you know, just how you – well, I mean, we started by talking about lines, obviously, so that's 5-on-5, and that's going to, you know, generate the most. But do you make lineup changes now based – like, meaning insert players in here to help either of the special team situation or to specifically help 5-on-5? Like, you know, the beauty of having such a great regular season from December 9th on is you had a lot of – key contributors, but you also had a lot of efficient contributors across the board. Do you think it makes sense to bring in a Metsa or a Carrick or a whomever at this point in time?
Well, I, depending on how Carrick is feeling, obviously, we know that, you know, he wasn't feeling great. And after they, you know, his game back, he only had played 6 minutes. I think it's asking a lot of Sam Carrick to come in and have an impact, maybe play 12, 13, 14 minutes, penalty kill, whatever, big face-offs. It's hard.
But what about Tanner Pearson? He's the
Tanner Pearson is maybe more, I don't want to say likely, because, okay, well, who is Tanner Pearson coming in for?
Right.
Are you going to take Jordan Greenway out? You're not taking Beck Malenstein out.
Right.
Are you taking Peyton Krebs out? He's on your top line. But if you reconfigure the lines, does that open up the door? But where is Tanner Pearson coming in from? And now we got to, you know, see, wait and see about Owen Power, who did play a couple of shifts after going into the boards and his leg completely twisted. But you never know what that's like the next day or 48 hours later. And if you don't have Owen Power, then are you saying, well, we're bringing Kesselring again? Are we bringing Logan Stanley? Are we making a change anyway? Because, you know, the penalty kill isn't where we need it to be. There's a lot of those discussions. But at the same time, you got to weigh in. Somebody that hasn't played in 3-4 weeks compared to somebody that has been in the lineup, but maybe not at its best. So those are the debates that you're going to have within the coach's room. I don't know that I'm making a change other than changing the lines.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm making a roster change, bringing in somebody else. I think I've got to change the lines the way they're configured before thinking somebody else is going to come in. You don't have anybody that, like, Austin's not coming back. Yuri Kulik's not coming back. You don't have anybody that could come in and maybe give you that boost in offense. But again, it comes down to, are you going to be able to defend? Are you going to be able to defend Montreal in game 6? That is going to be the biggest difference.
Well, the as you heard Lindy Ruff say last night, and as we have harped on extensively, the road teams have been very good in these playoffs, including Buffalo at 4-1. Incredibly, in the Eastern Conference, home teams are 12-20 so far this postseason. 12-20 for the home team. Stunning.
Oh, and 2 last night, right? When you look at the home
Well, no,
home
this
team.
Is just East, so.
But I'm just East, but I'm just saying overall. And I'm lose at home, Buffalo lose at home. That's road teams in those type of games. Sometimes, like Lindy Ruff said, our road games have been very good. It's actually been better.
Yeah.
But I still think the number one thing is Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovsky starting in the third period of game one. You saw them starting to take steps, right? Mm-hmm. And Caulfield's got 3 goals in 5 games in this series. Like, okay, you're not going to sneeze at that. Like, that line is going.
Right.
The top line for Buffalo hasn't. You've got to figure out a solution to that.
Marty, safe travels to Montreal.
Okay, I'll be watching the pregame tomorrow, Duffer.
Yes, undoubtedly you will. You might not have a choice. You'll be in the booth,
yes,
with Dan. As far as what's ahead here for the Sabres, it's tomorrow in Montreal, and then if they can secure another victory at the Bell Center, they will be taking on Montreal back here at KeyBank Center in Game 7 on Monday night. So that's the challenge right now, and Lindy Ruff knows exactly what lays ahead. This is the coach from earlier.
Lindy, do you have anything further on Owen Power?
He's in right now, getting treatment. And all I can offer is he said he's feeling pretty good, better than he thought he would feel. So that's encouraging.
It's to making goalie decisions, whether it's the one you made to stick with UPL or whatever decision you're going to make. Like, I'm curious what goes into that, because in your previous stint here, it wasn't something you really had to think about this time of year. Like, are you consulting with Bales on that, sports science? Like, what kind of things are you thinking about?
We meet as a staff. We meet with Bales. He's part of the group. And, I mean, sometimes other factors can be involved with, maybe one goalie's fatigued, maybe one goalie's got a little something going on. All those things come into consideration when you're going with your starting goaltender.
Lindy, some of Montreal's top guys were feeling the heat for a while there before they finally got going here. Now it's your top guys that are feeling it in terms of Tage and Tuck. But from your perspective, what are you seeing from what they're doing, and what do you need more from them?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the execution, trying to make a difference. When you look at the game being 3-2 and, Thompson walks in alone, it could have been a difference maker. I mean, he scores there, it's 4-2. We're pretty happy. Krebs in the second period walked down the slot almost the same as like Boston, and, we didn't put it in the back of the net. But this is the time of the year when, you get the opportunities, you have to take advantage. I think you look at the big mistake we made, and, we give Caulfield the back door, basically empty netter. And, when a team makes a big mistake like that, you need to take advantage of it.
And we've talked about a lot about the mood and the response you guys have had throughout these playoffs. Just, when you met with the team today, just what vibe did you get?
We didn't meet with the team today, just to clear that up. Team is not here.
Okay.
Team is going straight to the plane.
Just with Tage, he's had a different kind of playoffs. I mean, he's at a point a game, but he's not quite up to his offensive standard. Just how has he kind of handled this for the first time, I guess, when you look at it?
Well, it's an experience that, he hasn't really gone through. I think there are momentum swings in your top players. I mean, we just mentioned Montreal's top players and long stretch of not scoring even strength, and then you'll get that opportunity to make a difference. You've got to be able to make a difference. We know this time of year, there's a heightened awareness on all your top players. Every opportunity, every mistake is being critiqued. We've gone through the game as coaches. There's some things we feel we can do better. There's some things we feel we can help our top guys out with. And you got to be able to put the game behind you that you just played and be ready to move on to that next one. And I looked at the start of our game. It's the start we wanted, and we made a big mistake. I thought we had them up against the wall to start with, and we made a puck decision that wasn't a good puck decision, and we created some life and momentum for them.
We've talked a lot about identity of this team and how it's revealed itself over the course of the season. This is the first in facing elimination for the first time. What do you think might reveal itself on Saturday, and what do you see what gives you confidence that it will reveal itself in the right way?
Yeah, but because, you know, we faced a lot of adversity through the year, and you go through last year's adversity and all the stuff this year, and the team has responded almost to every challenge we've had. This is a completely different challenge. Being involved in an elimination game where now every mistake could mean the end for you. But every opportunity you get to take advantage of could mean, you know, we go on to play game seven.
Lindy, your team's facing elimination. What does this team need to do to win game six, force a game seven, and continue this season?
Yeah, we have to play on our toes. We've got to play to win. Can't be afraid. Got to play to win.
Lindy, when you address this club, the mental gymnastics of it, how much do you have to kind of live off of what you did in game four and maybe even what Tampa did in game six in the same spot in Montreal?
Yeah, you know, I think we had the right approach. You know, with the way we started the game and how well, you know, I thought we were keeping away from good opportunities in our end. The strength of our team really has been for most of the year has been the ability to get a lead and keep a lead. We didn't do that last night, obviously, but I think stay with your strength. I even thought the start of the third period, a couple of great opportunities, didn't take advantage of again. There was lots of opportunities inside that third period to get right back into the hockey game. But you got to make plays. And some of the plays sometimes don't turn out to be good plays. But we can't live on those plays. We got to be willing to just go all in to win a game. And I know these guys, some of the guys haven't been there before.
Lindy, you guys have been sensational with your starts, scoring first in so many of these games. What has been, or has there been a common theme as to why that hasn't been enough to propel you guys to victory in some of those?
Well, because the other team is trying real hard to score too. And I think that the other team is putting a lot of risk. And if we solve that risk, we get some good opportunities. And the opportunities were there. This is a good team we're playing. It's hard hockey. The last team we played was a good team, too. It was hard hockey. It went down to six games. I look at it right now, what is there, five teams left? To be sitting here talking to you guys, I think that this is a wonderful place to be. And I'll tell the team the same thing. We get to go to Montreal in game six in the middle of May to move on to a game seven. And I think we'll all be evaluated on what this game looks like. Just bring your best.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.